While former President Donald Trump no longer occupies the White House or Twitter, he still is a major force in the Republican Party. A question playing out in various forms in Washington is whether and for how long that can continue. Republican Representative from Wyoming Liz Cheney retained her status as number three for her party in the House of Representatives, fending off a challenge to demote her for voting in favor of impeachment, while freshman Congressional Representative Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia was stripped of both of her committee posts by a vote in the House yesterday, but most Republicans voted on her side. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see Donald Trump as the head of the Republican Party? Should the party stick with him or try to distance itself from him? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Julia Azari is an associate professor and assistant chair in the political science department at Marquette University, where her research focus includes the American presidency and political parties. She wrote about this topic at 538.com. Julia, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
I want to give a listen to Republican Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, really highlighting, I think, the question here. He was facing a censure vote by his state's Republican Party. He posted a video where he said that Trump had lied to them about the election being stolen. Here's a little bit of that video.
You are welcome to censure me again, but let's be clear about why this is happening. It's because I still believe, as you used to, that politics isn't about the weird worship of one dude. The party could purge Trump skeptics, but I'd like to convince you that not only is that civic cancer for the nation, it's just terrible for our party.
So Senator Sasse laying out the issue. Julia, does he hit the nail on the head there?
I mean, I think that this idea that politics isn't just the weird worship of one dude could apply in a lot of different situations. And I think it actually does carry an important message about politics and political parties being kind of collective entities that encompass a lot of different kinds of voices. I also think that that is, to some degree, what I wrote in my 538 piece is kind of what is happening in the Republican Party. It's just that those are very different voices than we might have expected to see 10 and certainly 15 or 20 years ago. But actually that it's, you know, Trump has, whether he intended to or not, sort of inspired this new generation of Trump-style politicians.
In that piece, you also compared Trump's exit from the presidency to several other former presidents. I know it's still early days, but how do you compare and contrast his role versus some of his predecessors?
So it's funny. One of the things that I've thought about studying Trump as president and in his relationship with the rest of the Republican Party is that while there are so many things that are exceptional and unique and can't really be compared, there are so many things that are really, you know, the sort of Trump version of the fairly normal thing. And one thing that is actually not that unusual is for a president to depart the White House with a fair amount of baggage, as you know, seen by some in their party as a really important standard bearer and by others as a political liability. So in the piece I looked at, two presidents who left, notably who left, you know, after their second term, George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was incredibly popular, but there was this really kind of ambivalent sense in his party about his impeachment, about his behavior in the White House. And I don't know that ambivalence has actually ever been resolved. And you have George W. Bush, who was, you know, in many ways a very kind of clear Republican leader who brought together a lot of different segments of the party, but then left office just very, very unpopular in the wake of the declining popularity of the Iraq War, and perhaps, you know, more impactfully on his rating, the decline of the economy in 2008. And so I also think that's not really resolved in terms of what those two former leaders' roles are in their party. So this kind of sense with Trump, and he's both a standard bearer and a liability, is actually not that unusual.
Talking to Julia Azari from Marquette University, looking at the still undetermined role of former President Trump in the Republican Party. Julia, on January 6th and the raid on the U.S. Capitol, I think there was a sense that something changed that day. Surely now more Republicans would turn against the president. People said that on many occasions, even before he was elected, though. Do you see that as a significant turning point for at least some in the Republican Party?
I mean, I do see it as a moment in which kind of, I think it's like many moments in the Trump presidency where everything changed and nothing did. And you did see, you know, Ben Sasse, who you played the clip from a second ago, has been a pretty vocal critic of President Trump while simultaneously being, you know, very conservative. And I think it's really notable that this division is not always, does not always fall along ideological lines. There are very conservative members of Congress who have been critical of Trump. I would count Liz Cheney in that group also. And, you know, members of Congress whose voting records are more mixed, actually, who, like Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, who voted against the certification of the contested states on January 6th. So, you know, I saw kind of the sharpening of that division. But in terms of a really strong kind of wholesale reestablishment of some political norms, which I think is what a lot of people were expecting, that's not really what we've seen. You know, we've seen a very small segment of the Republican Party thus far breaking off. Now, the impeachment trial begins on Monday. Maybe that will change. You know, maybe it won't. But for me, it actually felt like a lot more of the same in terms of this very uneasy relationship that the kind of mainstream of the Republican Party has often had with Donald Trump.
Looking at how Republicans run for re-election or election in the first place with Donald Trump in mind, I could see two opposite arguments. The pro-embrace Donald Trump argument being he's energized a lot of people. There are a lot of people in the Republican base who feel very connected with him. We can't win without them. On the other side, in 2016, Republicans held the White House, the Senate, and the House. Under Donald Trump, they've lost all three, and he's leaving with really low favorability numbers. So run away from him. How do they weigh those two arguments?
Yeah, I think that probably depends on, you know, to some degree on the geography of their situation and what kind of district they're looking at. Are they concerned about a primary challenge? And that comes down probably to some idiosyncratic factors, right? You know, is there someone in their state or their district who might challenge them from the right? You know, I think it also comes down to the degree to which members of Congress might make an individual calculus about whether they can do. This is a political science-y term that I hope the listeners will enjoy, which is cultivate a personal brand. The degree to which members of Congress might want to kind of establish themselves as being a Trump-style Republican and being part of that a national Trump-style movement to whatever degree they saw that as politically successful versus ones who might say, look, you know, I don't need to do that. I have my own way of relating to my constituents. You kind of see that with someone like Sasse, who has carved out, you know, he's written a book, he's kind of carved out a very specific political reputation that's linked to the state that he represents. And similarly, you know, Liz Cheney is from a political family and kind of has her own brand in that regard. So that might be, you know, that might be a difference, and that might not fall along lines that are obviously predictable at the outset.
And you mentioned primary challenges from the right. And does it break down ideological like that? What we used to think of a conservative platform, more tax cuts, less regulation, intervention in the economy? Or is this something different now, running at, not necessarily from the right, but from the pro-Trump faction, wherever we want to put that on an ideological line?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't have a really clear answer to that. I think that what we are calling running from the right is sort of what that means is changing a little bit. And so you might see challenges that are sort of from this more Trump style approach, which might be not so focused on traditional conservative issues like lower taxes and might be more about kind of some of these cultural claims or just about this more, what I would call maybe more combative political style. You know, time will tell. I probably won't have a good answer for you on that question until we start to see what actually happens.
We're talking to Associate Professor Julia Azari from Marquette University, looking at former President Trump's role in the Republican Party today and in the years to come. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a Republican yourself, do you want to see the former president play a big role, or do you want him to have a quiet retirement, however unlikely that might sound? What do you think of the actions of the U.S. House of Representatives and Republicans related to Representative Liz Cheney and her vote for impeachment, and first-term Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia and her sometimes shocking statements over the years? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Julia Azari, associate professor and assistant chair in the political science department at Marquette University, looking at the role of former President Trump in today's Republican Party. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Jeffrey is with us in De Pere. Jeffrey, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I honestly think that the former president should go away quietly. He's got enough problems of his own with his indebtedness to Deutsche Bank and the people of the state of New York. Also, I just listened to a little video for a bit on Fox and Friends, and Ron Johnson is the only one out there from the state of Wisconsin that's spewing whatever he wants, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. Why don't we hear from other representatives from the state of Wisconsin how they feel? Mike Gallagher, Tammy Baldwin, the other senators or congresspeople that are just sitting away quietly and allowing one person to say that maybe this is how the state of Wisconsin feels. So I'll take your answer off the air, but let's hear something from the people. Cross the aisle. Shake your hand. Move forward. Get out of this swamp.
Jeffrey, thanks a lot for the call. Julia, let's talk about Wisconsin's Republican delegation. Senator Ron Johnson certainly positioned himself as a strong supporter of the president. Do you have thoughts on the rest of the delegation, I guess especially on the Republican side, and how they've oriented themselves?
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, I think, again, interesting question. I think that traditionally that Wisconsin politicians have had kind of a strong tradition of independent politics. My cat has some real thoughts about this. I don't know if anyone can hear.
Outspoken politically, your cat. Yeah.
So, you know, I think there is this kind of old tradition of being very independent from the national parties and being very kind of rooted in a local identity, local issues, local representation. That has been a really challenging tradition to carry on in the last decade. And I think that some of these other representatives, like the caller mentioned, like Gallagher, are really stuck between these two things. And potentially, you know, I don't know about those representatives specifically, but you do hear from Republican representatives that they felt like their constituents, you know, they're concerned that their constituents will, you know, not support them anymore if they criticize the president too much. And they're concerned about all kinds of pushback and probably about facing primary elections, among other things. So that would be my guess as to why we haven't heard more. And also, you know, I think that probably they're thinking about, you know, what the next legislative session looks like, what those issues are.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Bill with us in Toma. Bill, hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Bill?
I wanted to bring up, we were talking about how whether Trump should or shouldn't go quietly into the background. And I wanted to point out that in the last 4 years, we've actually seen a lot more of Obama and Bush and Clinton than we have, say, 4 years ago when Obama was president. We didn't see that much Bill Clinton. We didn't see that much George Bush. But with Trump in office, we've seen these former presidents come more forward.
Interesting thought, Bill. Thanks for the observation. Julia, what do you think? Some former presidents, Bill thinks, maybe inspired during the Trump administration former presidents to speak out more.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that is actually kind of striking. I think the Obama example is particularly striking because Obama remains really popular among Democrats and has played kind of a role in the Democratic Party. Those are also three presidents who were pretty young when they left office, which can shape a post-presidency, but, very much so. And we saw these living presidents, ex-presidents, do this video on Inauguration Day. Former President Jimmy Carter wasn't there, but he was, I think, the only living president who wasn't. And so I do think some of that has been this effort because, I mean, to be perfectly frank, right, the Bush family has been fairly critical of Trump. And George W. Bush, I think, was one of those critics. He wasn't super flashy or vocal about it, but I think he has kind of participated in some of these bipartisan efforts to reassert kind of shared values across party lines. And I think that's kind of why we've seen more from these ex-presidents, kind of for better or for worse. The ex-president role is a really awkward and undefined one. And nobody in the party who's an up-and-comer wants to have the ex-president looming too much over them. We've certainly seen that when Bill Clinton has tried to make forays back into politics. And obviously his wife has been a big figure in Democratic politics also. And it always comes with a side of Bill Clinton, trying to still be in the mix. So I think it's really, there's a lot of different dimensions to that.
We're talking to Julia Azari from Marquette University about the future role of the past president, Donald Trump, in the Republican Party. Let's go to Carly with us now in Madison. Carly, hello.
Hi there. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Carly?
I would like to bring up, there are really two sides to this question. There is an argument to be made for the former president as the culmination, if not the embodiment, of a truly misogynistic, white supremacist, I will call it what it is, very racist strand of Republican ideology. And there is also an argument to be made that the man cows those around him and tends to, if not force them to fall in line, then at least persuades them to fall in line by virtue of his strongman type of personality and his tactics. I wonder the likelihood of a reckoning with either of those facets, whether it is the fear of a particular former president that has kept members of the Republican legislature in line over the past 4 years, or a reckoning with the misogynistic, the racist, the white supremacist elements within the Republican Party. If not,
thanks for the call, Julia. What do you think?
I mean, so far, I think, I've heard a lot of different things about this. I would recommend for the caller, there is an interesting discussion that the 538 podcast hosted among some kind of conservative, I guess I would call it conservative pollsters, intellectuals, talking about these sorts of things and talking about that. I do think that this issue of kind of reckoning with these more extreme views, which we can't deny now, I think are there. But I think who really has an incentive to have a reckoning meaningfully with those? It's not obvious that people holding office will. I think that a lot of those sorts of conversations will probably happen in the kind of think tank, journalistic, pollster type circles. What we have seen is that there was this hesitancy among congressional Republicans to speak out against the former president when he was in office. And a lot of times people attributed that to Twitter and they said, they don't want Trump to tweet about them. And now he's not going to. He's been permanently kicked off of Twitter. But, that concern still seems to be there. And so it does seem to me like maybe some of these tendencies and this sort of Trumpism within the party has gone beyond Trump. And it doesn't really seem like there's a lot of political energy to contend with those issues. I wish that there were a better answer to that, but that is sort of what I'm seeing.
Thanks for that call. In our last couple of minutes, Julia, I mean, every few years, I think we see a storyline about one or the other of the two big parties being irrevocably split between one wing and another wing, and that's going to hinder them in the next election and things like that. I don't know. It doesn't usually seem to pan out this way. Does this time seem different in any way to you in the Republican Party?
I mean, not really. that's the weird thing about the whole Trump situation is that these rifts would seem to be a lot more significant than at least the kinds of things we're used to seeing in more contemporary politics. And you're right. I think every 4 years we talk about these deep divisions within each party. Well, but they're both big parties, so there's always divisions. But it seemed like on January 6th, it seemed like it's not obvious what the path forward would be if you have people like Mitt Romney and Ben Sasse out there criticizing the Trump movement, and then you have people like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley continuing to kind of push for this questioning the legitimacy of the Electoral College vote. It seems like those are perspectives that couldn't be bargained away. And yet we're just not really seeing, you know, anything that looks like reconciling or reckoning, splitting apart, any of those things. I will say one thing that does occur to me is that if there's a very serious rift going into the nomination in 2024, that's when we might see those two factions having some incentive to become independent from one another if they think that they can they can, you know, benefit in the context of a presidential nomination. But in the context of being the out party and being in Congress, I don't see them having any real meaningful confrontation.
Julia, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Julia Azari is associate professor and assistant chair in the political science department at Marquette University. We talked to her today about the importance of former President Trump to the Republican Party and tension in the party over some of the members of the party and the role of the president.